Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Old Trafford. Glad to see the back of it this year, but is it 1 point gained or 2 points dropped? We'll talk about the draw at Manchester United, assess its impact on the title race, before looking ahead to Thursday's Europa League quarter-final with Atalanta. All of that with James Pearce and Simon Hughes. But as ever, let's start with those three words. I'm not going to come to you, Si. For once, I'm going to go to James for a more sensible, considered view, because clearly you won't even have thought about it until now.
I'm going to go with keep the faith.
Keep the faith. Si?
Well, I have thought about it, Tony. I'm going to surprise you. Lay off Kwanzaa.
I like it.
I think both of them are fair. Both of them are fair. Let's see what they're saying over on the Walk On Podcast Facebook group. Kieran Callaghan, not over yet. Steve Martin, we need Jota. Wes Bradshaw, it hurts, lads. And James Calandrino, too many misses. And for me, just score, will ya? We'll use one word for these purposes. It's Scouse, after all.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
Well, I've got to say, James, that first half, so frustrating, so reminiscent of the Cup game, the second half in the Cup game. A match that should have been out of sight. The 3 points should have been in the bag by half time. You know, they should have been in the position where they could have packed up and got in the coach and, you know, taken 11 from the crowd and put them on.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was the most infuriating thing that, you know, we talked about it in the build up to the game of you've got to put right what went wrong 3 weeks earlier in the FA Cup. And it was clear what had cost Liverpool on that occasion. And it was like, learn from your mistakes. And they didn't, did they? They actually just made the same mistakes over and over again. And there's no sugarcoating it. It's not a point gained. It's 100% two loss, despite Salah's late penalty, you know, salvaging a share of the spoils, because, you know, there was such a golfing class between those two teams, you know, especially in that first half. And, you know, when you're that wasteful, when you show that alarming lack of composure in the final third, it's always likely to come back to bite you. I actually said to someone in the press room at half time that it was like, you just know United can't be as bad as that second half. And it felt like, we've just seen it so often, haven't we, that you, when you don't kill a team off, you give them hope. And sure enough, United score what they, you know, their first attempt on target. And as Simon said, you know, one of the grimmest things from the weekend was seeing Kwanzaa being a lightning rod for criticism when, I mean, that's quite frankly ridiculous, because what cost Liverpool was the failings of their attackers, because, you know, they should have scored four or five. Let's be clear about that. And, you know, what was it, 28 shots to nine, you know, up to seven big chances, plays one, you know, 3.6 on the XG compared to 0.7. It was, every stat showed the gulf apart from the one that really matters.
Yeah, I mean, say, Kwanzaa should have been able to, like, score a hat-trick of own goals. They should have been that far ahead. Yes, it was an ill-advised pass. It was a mistake. You know, it's and maybe he should have gone, you know, wide to Salah. And that's the sort of ball, as he grows and develops and gets more experience, he won't play. But, I mean, yeah, you're right. He's not the problem.
No. I mean, he's been excellent for Liverpool since coming into the team. And I mean, I think the mistake that he made, and it was a mistake, you know, was, you know, symptomatic really of the way Liverpool had played the game generally. I'd exclude him from that before the mistake, because I actually thought he played quite a significant role in building up Liverpool's head of steam from the back. But it just seemed to me that the final pass was always maybe a yard or two behind where it should have been. And it reminded me a lot of a game a few years ago in the early Klopp years. I'm trying to remember whether Mourinho was the manager or Van Gaal, but it was a game where they dominated possession. And for the whole game, Emre Can seemed to be in possession of the ball in oceans of space, getting into good positions and then just not really, well, certainly not delivering the pass or the shot that was needed. And very strange for that to happen twice, you know, in two games in quick succession against the same opponent. Because by and large, for the Klopp era, you know, when something's been wrong or something's gone wrong, he's corrected it. But I wonder as well, is the Thursday night game playing into this? Were they just a little bit too casual again? In the same way that they played Sparta Prague with a strong team, they went played Sheffield United, strong team. Sometimes when you're playing Thursday, Sunday, you know, it just takes that edge off a little bit, you know, just in terms of being able to be incisive on the pitch. And it was just so frustrating to watch, Tony. I'm still frustrated now thinking about it, because the game should have been finished at half time. All the anxiety of the second half didn't need to happen.
No, it was painful. And, you know, failing to beat that Manchester United side three times in the season. But I think there's a bigger trend here, James, isn't it? You know, when you look at it, the lack of points against teams in the top six really jumps out at you, doesn't it? 8 points out of a possible 24. And if the title has gone, which I think it's a bit premature to say that, because we said last week on this pod that everyone had dropped points before the end of the season. I still think they will, you know, because that's the nature of this Premier League, although it's hard to see where City will drop them. But you've got to take more against the big teams.
Yeah, it's quite an alarming stat there, isn't it? When you think of how good Liverpool have been for the vast majority of this season, eight points out of 24 against teams in the top six is a pretty bleak return. You know, of course, there's been some mitigating circumstances in there. You think of the game down at Tottenham and the VAR shambles, you know, that is part of it. Of course, there's no disgrace in having two draws with Manchester City. The games against Arsenal were tight, weren't they? Liverpool probably should have beaten Arsenal at Anfield, you know, missed chances in that game. And then even the game at the Emirates, it was, you know, there was that massive mix-up between Alisson and Van Dijk. And, you know, Alisson, very rare that he has a day as bad as that effectively cost Liverpool on that occasion.
He's been in hiding ever since, hasn't he?
he's actually, you know, I think that's going to be interesting. The fact that, you know, as good as Kelleher has been, you'd imagine that Alisson will come back into the team this week. I think we'll see Alisson either on Thursday or probably more likely on Sunday. Well, certainly one of the two, either Atalanta or Palace. But yeah, that return against the top six, it's if Liverpool are going to win it from here, and I still think they can, they're going to have to sort it out, because, you know, with Villa away and Tottenham at home to come, I think they do have to be perfect now. I still think Arsenal and City will drop points, but I think, yeah, realistically, I think you're now looking that Liverpool probably have to win the last seven, and so that, you know, that means they've got to put right that pretty poor return against the top teams.
You know, the most aggravating thing for me, Si, is that it was an opportunity on Sunday, not only to get 3 points, but to narrow the goal difference gap with Arsenal. You could have brought it down by, I don't know, five.
Yeah, it is a bit of a problem, I think. It's strange with Arsenal, isn't it? Because they don't really have a goal scorer, I would say, in the team. But yet they have scored a lot of goals this season, and it gives them an advantage at this stage of the season. Had Liverpool lost that game on Sunday, I've got to say, I think it would have been curtains for the title. I actually think getting a draw out of it, although it's generally disappointing, it does keep them above City by a point. It gives them an advantage over City. I think Arsenal can win the league, but I'd still always back City to do it, because they've been in this position, as we know, you know, several times before, including, you know, twice against Liverpool. So on that basis, yeah, I think you've got to consider them favourites just because of the experience and the quality of them, that certainly the manager that they've got. But Liverpool have missed a few opportunities this season to rattle in a few more goals. I think, I mean, Sheffield United, they could have scored a lot more and didn't. They have been quite wasteful at times. I think that's one thing that, you know, people haven't really discussed is, it's like, you know, Liverpool, it's still a Klopp team. It's still a team that runs and physically tests the opposition. it's not a team that's big on finesse, I would say. I think Sunday was an example of a game where they missed Trent. You know, like, he's one of the few players in the team who can provide that killer pass or that cross. You know, McAllister is another one who can do that. But beyond that, they don't have those sort of ball players. You might argue Szoboszlai is one, but I thought he was really frustrating on Sunday. He got into some great positions and consistently chose the wrong pass. So up front, you know, they've got players that will run and test you like Diaz and Nunes. But are they top-class finishers? Are they players who, you know, will cleanly create an opportunity for a teammate? Not necessarily. They tend to do it by force of nature almost sometimes. So, you know, it was a reminder, I would say, that Liverpool are a slightly different team to what people sometimes think.
Which brings us to Diogo Jota. James, you focus your match analysis for The Athletic on the impact he could have had. Is he the magic bullet?
Well, getting him back is going to be huge, I think, in terms of the final stages of the season, both in the context of the title race, but also going for Europa League glory. I must admit, I sat there at Old Trafford on Sunday watching Nunes, you know, make an absolute hash of that golden opportunity at 1-1 when he doesn't even get it anywhere near the target, does he? He ends up crossing it for Darlow to knock behind for a corner. And even, you know, Salah hasn't been the player that we've come to expect for so long since he's come back from his injury. And I think in Jota, Liverpool are missing the most natural finisher in their squad. When you look at the numbers, you know, Jota's only started 18 games in all competitions this season. He's got 14 goals. You know, he hasn't, I think he missed, I think, the last dozen matches, and he's still, you know, it's only Nunes and Salah that's outscored him in that squad this season. Some people will say it's too simplistic, but I'd say a fit Diogo Jota, either starting that game on Sunday or coming off the bench for the last half an hour, then I think Liverpool win at Old Trafford, because I think he is more composed and doesn't snatch at opportunities in the same way as some of the others do.
When are we going to see him, James?
Back in training this week. So, yeah, him and Trent have been kind of like on the same rehab programs, you know, stepping it up together. That the hope was that they would rejoin the squad today, Tuesday, and then their workload would be gradually increased over the course of the week. So you'd imagine both of them would have Palace on Sunday in their sights.
Have your say and get involved by emailing walk-on@theathletic.com.
So, we need to talk about Salah, don't we? Since he come back from the hamstring injury, he hasn't looked at the peak of his form. I suppose you could say it's also during Ramadan, so he's been fasting. That's not an excuse, but, you know, it does affect players, although it affected him less in other years. Is this a particularly bad time as well for him to have a dip in form? Because, you know, you've got, obviously, Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes sitting there assessing whether what they're going to do with his contract, which, you know, given the age, fitness, cost, do you think it makes it even less likely that we'll see him next season?
Well, I think you've got to consider the way that Liverpool recruited Salah. A lot of it was based around the numbers, you know, that he was hitting at Roma, where Michael Edwards and the other chief scouts, Barry Hunter and Dave Fallows, envisaged that if you put Salah in a Klopp team, then, you know, that those numbers will increase. So they will be looking.
To be fair, Edwards was really hot from back in 2014.
He was, yes. He wanted to sign him then. And Liverpool were close to getting him, but and would have got him had Jose Mourinho not really pushed for him as much as he did at Chelsea. Liverpool's view was that he didn't fail at Chelsea as such. He just wasn't used. And then obviously he went to Italy, did really well there, scored a lot of goals for Roma. And as I said, that Liverpool felt that if they put him into the Liverpool team, that, you know, that the yield is just going to increase. So it will be around the numbers. I mean, I'm not overly concerned by his performances because he's still affecting the game. He's still getting opportunities. He's still...
Defenders have got to account for him.
Yeah, he's still a handful, you know, and you can tell he's still preoccupied that the thought of the players who are trying to stop him. It's just his execution hasn't been quite as as good as it normally is. I can understand you said about the hamstring. It's an injury, certainly at his age, that you need to recover from. And I know his game has changed. He's not all about running anymore. But let's face it, a hamstring is a pretty significant part of the body for any player who plays his role. So that needs to be right. I don't get the impression that's affecting him. I just think he hasn't quite got his rhythm back yet. But as I said, he's still creating chances. He's still getting into the places of opportunity. So I don't know what his numbers are like generally, you know, in terms of his sprints, in terms of how this all links into what they want. I think you've also got to consider, you know, it's not just the sporting director and Michael Edwards. It's what the new manager might want from his wider players as well. He might have a slightly different idea of what that role should be. And I think from a much wider perspective again, I mean, you've only got to look at Everton really over what's happened to them over the last couple of years where...
Oh, a bit like relief.
Well, the reality is they're in this position because, you know, they haven't traded well. They've spent too much money on players and haven't recouped much of that money whatsoever. So the real, you know, despite all the conversations about interest repayments on the stadium, if they'd have sold one player at a profit, they probably wouldn't be in this position. We wouldn't have this conversation about them now. So that is a reminder to all clubs that you've got to trade well. So from Salah's perspective, Liverpool could still potentially make a lot of money from him at an age where, you know, he's... I don't want to say he's way past his best because he's still contributing in a big way, but they can make a lot of money on a player that they might not get a lot of money for in a couple of years' time, even if they renew his contract, at a time where a new manager might be coming in who wants to make some changes to the team. So there is the economic reality that Liverpool have to respect as well. Now, people hate that conversation because it just sounds like FSG are, you know, tight. You don't want to do anything. But look what's happening around football. FFP is becoming increasingly, it's being adhered to more. So you do have to create the real economic environment for a club to be stable. Now, obviously, the revenues and everything else at the club might dictate that Liverpool are in a healthier position. But, you know, the big trades here to be made in players, as Liverpool learned, let's not forget, Liverpool are in the position where they are in because they sold big on a player and got much more money than he was worth, really, in Philip Coutinho, you know, which allowed them to go and buy again. So all these things are going to be considered. It's going to be fascinating to see how Liverpool deal with it. I think that to have three major players, you know, with their contracts being up at the same time, so that's Trent Alexander-Arnold and Virgil van Dijk, it's dangerous by Liverpool that they've allowed this to happen at the same time because it means that they're going to have to reinvest a significant amount of money to keep all of them. I'm surprised that they've allowed this to happen. There's lots of reasons, I think, why we are here in this moment. But, you know, one thing I will say is if Sal's thinking he's going to get a big pay rise, I think he's going to have to tailor his expectations.
It's not going to happen. A couple of things there before I come to you and ask you your view on it, James. I think if any new manager doesn't want Mohamed Salah, you shouldn't be employing him. But unfortunately, I don't believe at this stage, and this is just my opinion, but I have strong feelings that the new manager won't be getting him. James, are there any movements in those contract talks? And you know what? I don't want any reassuring noises from the club. You know, don't worry about. I am worried about it.
It's something that will be addressed in the summer. All parties at the minute seemingly just want to focus on the job in hand, which is, you know, rinsing every last bit they can out of this season and giving Klopp the best possible send-off. So yeah, I'd be really surprised if there's any developments on that in the next, you know, 5 or 6 weeks. I think the time will come after the end of the season with Richard Hughes obviously bedded in as sporting director, where, you know, that is quite obviously one of his massive priorities at addressing that. So just picking up on what Simon said about, I think it is a case of rhythm with Salah. I've seen people saying, oh, we're seeing the kind of the demise of Mo Salah, and it's like, come off it. I think he started 5 games since his comeback from that hamstring injury and scored 4 goals in that time. So we're kind of probably, you know, probably a bit unrealistic to think he can just flick his fingers and just return to the heights we've come to expect from him. Because I think also he's a guy that very rarely has he had to cope with overcoming injuries. That was probably, well, it's the worst injury he's had.
It's been so remarkably robust at Untrue.
Yeah, yeah. So you've probably got to go back to Ramos in the 2018 Champions League final when he dumped him on his shoulder for the last time that he suffered an injury as bad as that. And of course, because that was the end of the season, it didn't really have much of a knock-on effect in terms of missing the matches in during that rehab period. So there is a big decision there on the horizon. There's no doubt about that, about Salah. You know, the fact that he's 32 in June. But a lot of it all hinge on what he wants. The stuff with the Saudi Pro League last summer, it was almost academic, really, because it was so late until all the talk was followed up with a proper offer that it wasn't even a conversation for Liverpool to have, because it was like, well, what good is that money to us now when we wouldn't be able to spend it and bring in a replacement? But that offer was 100 million rising to 150 million pounds. So say, for argument's sake, you get offered 90 million or 85 million or something in June, I think that's a very different conversation to whether you're getting offered that in the middle of August. And it's a case of, well, what can you do with that money? How can you reinvest it? And as I said, you know, probably the biggest single factor is, what does Mo Salah want? Because I hope he stays put, signs another extension and keeps on rewriting club records. But coming back down to the last year of his contract, he's got some big decisions to make himself about what, you know, where he sees his future.
Yeah, I think what he probably wants is, like what most people want, a pay rise, and I don't think he's going to get it at his age. And that does concern me, because I'd love to see him retire in a Liverpool shirt. Well, so let's get back to the title race. You've mentioned before Man City, and they weigh so heavily on your mind. And in recent games, they seem to be building up even more of a head of steam than usual.
The problem is City have been so good, and you're expecting them to be relentlessly good. I know people are saying, you know, they will drop points. I'm not sure whether they will. They might get knocked out of Europe at some point, but whether they'll drop points in the Premier League, I'm not sure. I think that's the thing that is quite a difficult thing to come to terms with. So it means that any drop points from a Liverpool perspective feels terminal, really. Who knows? You know, Salah's penalty at Old Trafford could prove to be decisive at the end of the season. And I can understand the doom and gloom around it, because the performance and the arc of the match was really disappointing from Liverpool's perspective. But they did get a point out of it, which is something that, you know, they weren't able to. They obviously lost the previous game at Old Trafford, and it does get them. It keeps them ahead of City, which I think is really important at this stage. But I agree. I think that Liverpool, away game at Villa, home game at Spurs, you know, their potential games, which are tough, you know, they do have all the tough-ish games that they're going to have to be right on it. I just think that the one thing that gives me some confidence that Liverpool could win it is the fact that City and Arsenal could end up playing each other in the Champions League semi-final. Emotionally, physically, everything that will drain both managers, because it'll drain both managers, and therefore will drain the players, because Guardiola will be desperate to beat Arteta and the other way around, to prove how smart they both are. I can just imagine it, the whole tie burning each other's heads out, basically. So I think that is.
So, well, let me get this straight. You're asking us to support City against Real Madrid and Arsenal against Bayern Munich.
I think it'll be useful for Liverpool, yeah, because it means that they both have to play extra games. It means that there's going to be so much hype around those games, and equally one of them is going to end up really disappointed. So I think it's tremendously useful if they both go through. And let's hope that it physically tests them, each of the quarterfinals that they've got to play as well. Meanwhile, you know, Liverpool, obviously, they've got the Europa League. I think they're more than capable in negotiating that run. So I think that gives them a slight advantage going into it. But for all the reasons we discussed, I think availability is going to be key, you know, for Liverpool again. If they can get Diogo Jota back on the pitch, I think it just gives them that extra option, particularly through the middle. It's almost a guarantee of goals, isn't it? he sniffs chances out. And at the moment, it just feels like he don't have that instinct inside the box a little bit. If he can get him back, I just think it gives them another edge and give everybody a bit of confidence. And it'll give the crowd confidence inside the stadium, knowing that he's around and available to come on. And there's always the sense of inevitability when Jota gets on the pitch that he's going to score. So I think when you've got that level of sort of confidence in a player, it's reassuring as well. So yeah, I think it's still all to play for. You know, in a week's time, we could be talking about a Liverpool victory on Thursday, another one on Sunday. You know, they're another game further in. The disappointment of United's behind them. In a week's time, the whole mood could be very different to what it is at the moment, while it rains outside and it's windy and it feels like the world's ending.
You're listening to Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
James, a Tottenham our biggest hope. Look, there's probably going to be 5 Champions League spots, so they're effectively in the Champions League next season. They've got to play Arsenal. So they've got one job, haven't they, to stop Arsenal winning the league.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they, of course, they've got to play City, and that game against City hasn't been arranged yet, has it? I think they've been waiting to see what happens with the Champions League dates and whether City get through. But it's that game, Tottenham, Man City, likely to be midweek in the final week of the season. So yeah, you're right, Tony. Tottenham are going to have a massive say on who wins the title. The fact that they play all 3 contenders in the next 6 weeks. So and when you look at the fixtures, I just don't see Arsenal as good as Arsenal were at Brighton, and I watched that game on Saturday. Feels like a good time to be playing Brighton at the minute, because I think De Zerbi seems to have like almost lost a bit of interest and seems to be looking elsewhere. And that was a very one-sided game. But you look at Arsenal's fixtures coming up, and they've got, you know, they've got Wolves away, which is, well, Liverpool know themselves, that is not straightforward. They've got, obviously, they've got Tottenham. They've got, still got a good Old Trafford as well. So I definitely see Arsenal dropping points, and City, I think the best hope of City dropping points is that rearranged game at Tottenham. Yeah, I still think if Liverpool win their last 7, that they win the league, but that's a big if at the minute, because, you know, they have, even when they've won in recent weeks, and you kind of, you know, on the one hand, you kind of admire the, you know, the kind of powers of recovery and, you know, the fact they kept their heads against Sheffield United and against Brighton and, you know, rode out that nervy finish. But it's like, they are going to have to start playing better in terms of both ends of the pitch, because you can't be making such hard work of it. Otherwise, it's going to catch you out. And that's what happened at Old Trafford last Sunday. I mean, what is it? 1 clean sheet in the last 10 Premier League matches. That isn't a great start when you're going for the title. And that's fine if you're being ruthless at the other end. But when you're not being ruthless and when you're letting teams off the hook and you're liable to concede, that is something that has to be addressed.
One thing I think that is relevant in all this is that, you know, Liverpool have been forced into quite a lot of defensive changes, as have City, actually. And City have conceded, you know, they obviously conceded twice against Palace, could have potentially conceded more. I think that's really having an impact, really, on some of the performances of both teams. Meanwhile, Arsenal, by and large, their defences remained pretty consistent over a long period of time now, you know, with the two inverted full-backs or wing-backs or whatever, which way you want to call it, and the two centre-halves consistently being the same two. I think you forget, just, it's like Virgil van Dijk tends to make everything all right, doesn't he? No matter who he's playing alongside. But then you've had the full-backs changing. Andy Robertson's been in and out. You've got Trent, who's been out for a long time. Even, I mean, one thing, you know, in relation to Salah, he's had to play with different players behind him and around him for such a long time. He's had Trent behind him. Obviously, Jordan Henderson left last summer, but that was a real consistent theme of Liverpool's attacking threat down that right. So Liverpool have had to deal with a lot of changes. That's why I'm saying I just think it's important that they try. It's hard when you're sort of trying to compete in Europe and domestically, but if they could just get a bit more consistency in the team selection, I think it might help them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was about to make the same point. We look at the defence, and if you would have told us at the beginning of the season that it had changed so much and there'd be so many injuries, you'd probably say, oh, you know, we're going to finish 10th.
This is, you're right, Tony. This is the thing. I mean, I was speaking to a mate of mine after the game, and I did agree with him. I mean, at the start of the season, if somebody had said Liverpool would be in this position now, given the overhaul of the team, you think back to like sort of the start of the Klopp era, you know, it did take time for him to build that sense of identity on the pitch. And it feels like it's a shame for Klopp because he's not going to be around in a year's time to maybe see this come to fruition. You know, that in a year's time, if it's the same group of players, I'm sure they're going to be a lot more, you know, we talk about that word rhythm all the time, that they'll understand each other a lot more in a year's time. And they're ahead of schedule, I would say, based on what the expectations were at the start of the season. That's not to say that they shouldn't be going for it now. But then you throw in the fact of all the injuries that they've had. I mean, it's incredible, as you said, Tony. You just said at the start of the season, Connor Bradley will be the right back going to Old Trafford. You'll have Gerald Kwanza, who finished last season on loan, playing for Bristol Rovers. You know, and you say you're still in contention for the Europa League. You've won the League Cup. And you might win the league. People would have said, oh, come off it, you know.
Yeah, it sounds ludicrous, doesn't it? You know.
So they have done incredibly well when you add the addition of the injuries. All with the caveat, I would say that, you know, maybe some of these injuries could have been preventable as well. It's like people say injuries are poor old Liverpool. It's like, well, to what extent were these injuries preventable? How, you know, could the club have done a bit better around this?
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on, James, to Atalanta. Quarterfinals of the Europa League. Dublin beckons with its logistical nightmares. I mean, how good are Atalanta?
Sixth in Serie A. So, yeah, I think Liverpool, obviously, it's only, what was it, 3-4 years ago since they met them in the group stage of the Champions League. Won comfortably over there and then lost at home, but it wasn't proper football, was it? It was behind closed doors in the lifeless atmospheres of the pandemic. So, you know, it's a decent draw for Liverpool, isn't it? When you get to the last eight of any European competition, you're not going to be facing any mugs, but it's, you know, you'd certainly be rather playing against Atalanta this week than Bayern Munich or Real Madrid, which is what obviously Liverpool's title rivals are facing up to. And I think, yeah, the big thing is you just want to see Liverpool go out there and play with that kind of ruthlessness that's been lacking, you know, for quite a while, really. When you know, probably going back to the games against Sparta Prague, and then, you know, before that, you probably got to go back to that Luton home game, haven't you, when Liverpool turned it around and blew them away in the second half. It's a lot of games since then have been a struggle, and I think you just want to see Liverpool, you know, like, just show how much better they are than Atalanta on in that first leg, to give them a cushion going into the away game next Thursday, so that you can then, you know, rotate a little bit and hold players back with one eye on, what it'd be, Fulham away, isn't it, on that following weekend. So, you know, I think we'll see some changes. I think one of the positive things from Old Trafford was, I thought, you know, Harvey Elliott again impacted that game really well off the bench. You know, Gakpo's come in for a lot of stick. I actually thought he was much better than he has been. You know, valuable minutes for Curtis Jones as well, on his kind of building up his match fitness and rhythm. So, and then when you throw into the mix, obviously, Alisson, Trent, Jota back in full training this week, it's a much better position than Klopp has found himself in, well, you know, probably since the autumn.
And then looking further ahead to Sunday, Si, it's Crystal Palace come. You know, the saddest thing about this, we won't get to see Roy on his farewell tour. I'll miss my mate.
If we done a podcast this year that hasn't mentioned Hodgson at some point, I think probably not. Yeah, I watched Palace against City, against my better judgment, on Saturday, and they were much better than they have been previously under Hodgson's guidance. He has a little bit
No, surely not. Roy improves everyone.
They were well organised, but the more creative players did seem to have a bit more freedom. And Mateta is on fire at the moment. Can't stop scoring goals. But that said, it's Liverpool at home against Crystal Palace, so you just expect Liverpool to win, don't you, really? I actually think the Atalanta game is going to be the harder of the two games, I think. I know the sixth in Serie A, but Serie A has improved over the last few seasons, as evidenced, you know, by the appearance of two Italian teams in the semi-finals last season. I realise this season they haven't done quite as well. But it's a more competitive league and they're going to be bang up for it. You know, they've had a big renovation of their stadium. You know, it's a modern ground now. It used to be one of the sort of very slightly depressing old Italian grounds. But it's their biggest game in Europe, certainly next week when they play in Italy. So I think it's going to be a tough two-legged tie to negotiate, but I'd expect Liverpool to get through, and I'd expect Liverpool to beat Palace as well. And you know, I'd expect maybe Palace to take the lead, as some teams of lesser means have done and threatened to do at Anfield over the last couple of weeks. But as long as everybody remains calm, you'd always back Liverpool to get past a team like Crystal Palace.
Here's the thing, and you know, sort of, this makes me angry because, you know, you've just said you'd expect Palace to take the lead. There are, like, people like myself who are of a certain age, and our systems can't take this tension and worry. You know, Liverpool are doing more to shorten my life with letting other teams take the lead than anything else, you know what I mean?
Sheffield United, you know, should have been one ahead, shouldn't they? I don't feel last week, really. The first minute, I mean, it was a great save from Kelleher as well. Another one of those saves that people in the fullness of time forget about. But, I mean, to fall behind in successive home games to Brighton and Sheffield United, I'm just like, come on, Liverpool. Get your act together from the start, you know.
I was going to say, just in terms of Kelleher, like, I was just picking up what Simon said before about, you know, if anyone had said to you that, you know, Kwanzaa would play 30 games this season, Bradley over 20... I mean, Keller has actually made more appearances now than Alisson. And imagine if someone had said that to you at the start of the season, you know, that you would never have believed that Liverpool could cope without arguably the best goalkeeper in world football for so long. So I think we will see Alisson back between the posts in the coming week. But yeah, Keller deserves so much credit, because without him showcasing a level of consistency that he's not had the opportunity to show before in his Liverpool career, Liverpool would be absolutely nowhere near kind of competing for the title.
Yeah, I know there'll be listeners who'll go, you know what, if I heard this, if you would have told us in August again, I'm going to scream, you know, it's, and, you know, because there's a bit of me that feels that way as well, but you do have to take a reality check and see.
You have to remember where you come from, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, this team has faced numerous challenges that we didn't expect. And by and large, they've overcome them. And they're hanging around in the title race. So we started off talking about the doom and gloom of Old Trafford. But whichever way you cut it, this title race is still on. And there's plenty to play for. And there's plenty to be excited about it. Yes, I could do with less of that excitement for me nerves. But you know what? This is going to be a mad few weeks coming up. And relish it, because this is what football's all about. So that's it from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Simon for joining me, and you for listening in. James will be at the match on Sunday, hopefully to do a quick post-mortem on the ritual dismantlement of Crystal Palace. So make sure you tune into that, and we'll be back with Walk On next week. And I'll tell you what, things are only going to get more thrilling between now and the end of the season.
The Athletic.